Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. We are all ready to talk some Penn State football after an exciting overtime 33-30 win over those USC Trojans. Steve, for every Penn State fan, this was causing heart problems, I know, at least for me. Everyone has their own experience. You were on the road with your family trying to enjoy this game. Pretty crazy, the events.
Yeah, so I'm actually in Bedford, Pennsylvania for the Fall Foliage Festival with my family. And, you know, we had dinner reservations at 5, sort of hoping that coincided with around halftime. And I had my oldest son at the bar with me. Game there as his brother and my wife tried to take a nap. And, you know, first possession, Penn State goes right down the field, very exciting. And I'll talk about the refs in a second because that was a really horrible call. But, you know, long story short, we go to dinner around 17:03. And, you know, everybody sort of at the bar, you know, knew my interest. Ton of Penn State people here for the festival, recommended to anybody who's ever around this area this time of year. And we leave dinner. And at that point, I just sort of look over to the bar, people that I made friends with, and said, you know, how bad is it? And they said, it's tied. And I said, please don't mess with me. I might have used another word with mess, but you get the idea.
You used the same word that James Franklin used in his post-game interview.
Exactly. So we run up to our room when it was tied 23-23. Just saw literally the time where the guy makes the kick for Penn State. Was a really exciting ending. My boys are a little confused because they're, you know, seeing daddy scream at the TV. Mommy's trying to explain that he's excited. He's not angry. But the nice thing about staying at a resort with so many Penn State people is literally when the final kick was made, you heard the whole resort erupt. And that was just a really neat experience. And even my wife, who's not the biggest football fan, thought it was pretty cool. So.
That sounds lots of fun. Well, I got to clarify, though. You said you were at the bar with your son. Yeah. How old is your son?
He turned 3 in August. So.
It's never too early to start, Steve.
It's the only place we can see the game.
3 years old at the bar. That's good fathering on your part.
Yeah. Wow. It's probably not going to be the last time he's up at a bar with his dad watching a Penn State game. I'll just leave it at that.
Very good. Well, let's get to the game a little bit. Down in the first half, 20-6. Now, you have already very quickly established yourself as the negative Nelly, okay, in watching this Penn State team. Tell me your thoughts when it's 20-6 USC ahead in the game.
Well, I think you know my thoughts because I'm pretty sure I texted you. This is just another example of big game James on the road. And, you know, when Aller threw the first interception at such a critical time, I really did have my doubts. I'm not going to lie about that. You know, one thing I will say, because everybody sort of knows by this point, I'm not the biggest Franklin fan. I will give him credit in this regard, in that, you know, even through the years, and that's why it's not just sort of a fluke thing with the team, very seldom do his players quit on him. And I will give him credit for that. That said, you know, I thought, I'll reiterate again, on that first drive, that pass interference call I thought was atrocious. Honestly, I thought a lot of the referees' performance was really bad. They were not calling a lot of the holding. I saw USC doing on the Penn State players. I did not really understand the non-pass interference calls. Those guys were draping all over Tyler Warren, still wasn't affecting him. And the announcers, I mean, they were horrible. I mean, they didn't once say anything about that. You know, I think, was it Nessler talking about, you know, Aller's been a starter for 3 years? No, he hasn't. You know, just do your homework. I mean, they pay how many millions of dollars to screw this stuff up? I'm sorry. But again, you know, that is a quality win. You know, perseverance. I think it's really great that they have a bye week, just because I'm sure that's emotionally draining, just logistical travel. You know, but that said, we do have some sort of patterns here that we talked about being concerning, and that sort of the slow starts. That again was a problem here on the defense. You know, eventually, you know, they were able to correct some of those things. Still have poor tackling. I think we talked about heading into this game, a lot of questions about the secondary. Some of those answers that we saw on Saturday weren't necessarily the answers we were looking for. So I think that's sort of you know, something that worries me. There should no longer be a kicking competition. You know, if you make a kick like that at the end of the game to win it, USC has a pretty good kicker. And you know, we talked about it, so much of that sort of being between the years and that guy choking on their end and our guy coming through. So I think at this point we should put any ideas of a kicking competition to rest. As far as I'm concerned, that was settled with that last kick. And you know, Drew Aller, I mean, two of his interceptions, the first two were really bad. But that said, the fact that he was able to carry the team, you know, I thought was really a credit to him. And, you know, to be able to shake those off, that's a credit also to him sort of between the years, and a lot to be encouraged about now, looking at sort of the latter half of the season.
Well, a couple things. You said a lot there that I need to react to. First of all, when I actually wrote down a couple of your quotes, your text messages.
So the ones that you can keep your rating on, I hope.
Yes, but I will give you credit for fessing up to them, especially, you know, Big Game James strikes again. Mm-hmm. I had mentioned to you, and I trust me, later in the week, I will give Andy Shea a very hard time. He sent me a note, the game is over. And I mentioned that to you, and you quickly said you're with Andy, and you also said they'll be lucky to beat Minnesota. Now, I bring all that up because I'm going to fess up now for me. The first two possessions of this game, USC gets the kickoff, got a first down, ends up punting. Penn State marches the length of the field. We'll talk about that offensive pass interference in a second. Looked like they scored a touchdown. It got taken off the board. They settled for a field goal. I quickly went to Twitter and said, well, there goes that slow start idea. They get a stop on defense, march the field, and score. And it took only about a minute for me to say, well, that didn't age very well. Because the next play from scrimmage, USC goes 75 yards and scores the touchdown. So to hit on a couple of these things, first of all, the offensive pass interference, and it does seem like there's a bit more of a focus on making that call this season, or maybe it's just Penn State. But the reason why I had an issue with it, Steve, was it looked to me like the defensive player was the one who initiated the contact with Julian Fleming.
Yes, absolutely. I thought, if anything, the flag was going to be on him for doing just that. I mean, that was just a terrible call. And particularly when they weren't really calling it on the defensive end. I really don't understand that. And there was a lot of just holding blatantly by USC when Penn State's pass rush was trying to get there. That, yeah, I guess you're playing in Los Angeles. Maybe you get calls like that. But and the fact that, people calling the game don't even comment on that. I just wasn't happy all around. I should also just clarify, for the portion of the game that I did miss, I did see the Big Ten in 60 today. So I have seen the full game, so I am in a position to comment on it. Although, you know, people from D.C. often have don't really aren't concerned with commenting on things they don't know anything about. Maybe I'll be the one exception.
So true. For those who don't know, yes, yeah, Steve is from D.C. and works in the political world. So he is very aware of how that works, the politics in D.C. But the call, that specific call, and I'm more in general on calls, is you need to be sure, and the play has to be a difference maker to call it. I noticed too, there seemed to be a lot of holding being done by the USC offensive line that was not called. So it kind of balances out. I know if you're a USC fan, you're going to point at the last possession that USC had the ball in, right? I guess it was the overtime, where there could have been flags thrown for pass interference on the Penn State defense, but you don't just start calling things that late in the game when you haven't been calling it the rest of the way.
They could have thrown even more flags on Penn State's defense for holding the or USC's defense for holding the Penn State receivers. So, I mean, at that point, maybe it's just sort of to the ref's credit. If you're just going to let it go, let the kids play. That's just how the game's going to be played then. But still, I mean, another theme throughout the year has been just the poor officiating.
Let's go pick it up early in the game when things were going on there. I felt really good, obviously. First two possessions, USC get killed and felt like Penn State was beginning to establish themselves, that they were the better team on both sides of the ball. When USC runs that end around, it seemed to me like even with that, I still felt pretty good about Penn State. I don't want to call it a fluke play. I want to call it a well-coached play, a great call by their coaches. They outdid the Penn State defense. And it seems like if you're going to beat this Penn State defense, you do that by fooling them, by creating misdirection, by taking advantage of them overrunning a play or that extra advantage. They're a little too aggressive sometimes.
Yeah, you can use your speed against you. I mean, you can run yourself out of the play. Penn State offensively could move the ball at will. And that was never really a concern. I think what was concerning to me is that when they sort of fell down early, 17-3, that my fear was at that point, okay, I was assuming that Penn State was really just going to establish the run. And at that point, it was really on Aller just to try to score quickly and try to keep up. Because the defense wasn't doing their part, particularly in the first quarter. It wasn't just quick plays, reverses, and things like that. I mean, USC was throwing the ball pretty easily down the field. And honestly, for the most part of the game, these short passes were pretty effective against the defense, again, something we've seen sort of throughout the season so far.
It has been the case. And along with that, some of the poor tackling, which it's still an issue, Steve.
It is. I mean, it turns a three-yard play into a 13-yard play. And there were a couple of times, you know, on third and long where you were really hoping that Penn State would be able to get off the field, and they weren't. And that's, again, another concern that I see sort of dating back a few weeks now.
It has been the case. But as has been the case, and we'll talk about this, they were able to turn things around. They've been a very good second-half team all year. Once again, they were able to demonstrate it. And I said it might sound silly, but one of the reasons why I still felt okay, even down two touchdowns, is if you're going to fall behind early. Give yourself enough time for a comeback. And they did do that, and they've established their ability to do it, and USC has established just the opposite. We've got lots more to go. Stick with us after the break. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy cafe tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA. Award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve Pavlik. I am Jim Galante. It is quarter number two of our show. Just a quick note, coming up Whiteout Weekend, the weekend Penn State plays Washington, Happy Valley United, that is the Penn State Collective, they are sponsoring a whiteout party at the newly renovated Nittany Lion Inn. So that is on Friday night, November 11th, from 7 to 11. They have music, dancing. In fact, it's live music from the 80s cover band, Velveeta. Food, open bar, there's a raffle, an auction, so much going on, including several football. Letterman will be there. Again, that's Friday night, a whiteout weekend, a great way to start that weekend if you're in town. For more information and tickets, go to happyvalleyunited.com, click the events button, and you'll get all the information and a chance to purchase your tickets. Steve, it sounds like your son is still pretty excited about that Penn State win.
Sorry. Yeah. No, I mean, he's yelling now the way I was last night, but trying to make do here. Apologies for the listeners there.
Oh, it's no problem at all. I'm sure they appreciate the excitement. It sounded like he was yelling, "We are." I could be wrong, but that's what it sounds like, Steve.
More of a lion roar, but I'll...
I appreciate that. So, again, interesting game. First, just to get your emotion in this, again, you are very down on James Franklin. I know that. Not the biggest James Franklin fan. And when the team got down, they're on the road, going to the West Coast. This is where the team has struggled at times. When they do turn it around and they come all the way back, what's your emotion like then? Especially you're traveling, you're with your family. You mentioned you missed a little bit of the middle part of the game for that comeback. I don't know if that's just a coincidence. You walk away and they score a couple touchdowns.
Well, when USC scored that touchdown there in the fourth quarter, I made a comment to my wife to that effect. Like, maybe I should just turn it off, because every time I turn it on, they seem to be performing poorly. Thought did cross my mind. I'm glad I didn't. You know, look, maybe it's an emotional hedge. I can either be right about Franklin if they lose, or could be happy if they win. I'm happy they won. And, you know, I will get Franklin credit over the years. While his road record has been reason for concern, and I don't really shy away from that just after, based off one good win yesterday, I think there's still reason to be concerned about his road record. The fact that those players don't quit, you know, that's something going back to that special season in 16, 17, that, you know, through different coaches, through different players, that's a testament to identifying guys that aren't going to quit. And for that, I will give them credit.
And that definitely was the case here. Now, before we get into some of the individuals, and there were just several outstanding individual performances, I want to ask you about this. Going, the point of conversation, it seemed, all last week nationally was making this kind of travel, traveling to the West Coast, traveling two time zones. In the Big Ten, the record for teams doing that with the two time zone travel was 1-8. And this weekend was going to be a real test of that theory. Both Penn State and Ohio State going on the road and facing legitimate tests, playing against USC and Oregon. We saw the Buckeyes went down, and going into that, I felt, and I still feel like Ohio State had and has the superior roster to Oregon, yet they still lost that game. Penn State certainly got tested by a USC team that, again, I think Penn State has the superior roster. So how big do you think this effect is, this traveling a couple time zones?
It's a real factor. And because it's the first season, I think we don't know that coaches have necessarily figured out how to adjust for it. I think they'll get better at that moving forward. I don't know. I know you're into the gambling, that the odds makers and stuff have, you know, honestly accounted for that maybe as much as they should. Talked about some of the swings in that line of the USC Penn State game in particular. If I recall, I believe Minnesota went out to UCLA and won. So that's another example of a team that was successful in doing that. But look, a few years ago, Oregon, I remember, came into Iowa State and beat them pretty convincingly, you know, there. So it can be done. I think it's really on the coaches to sort of figure out the preparations, how best to do it. But the body clock is a real thing.
And yes, and I think it is a situation, and I think we saw it there, and that's going to have to be part of how these teams adapt to travel, and it's going to happen both ways. USC was obviously affected when they traveled east, and these teams traveling west. Now, for this game, I mentioned about some of the individuals coming up large. I want to start first with Andy Kotelnicki. I think this was the first game where he really opened up the playbook, dug deep, and we saw so many different things. We'll get to Tyler Warren and what he did individually, but this starts with Andy Kotelnicki and what he's doing with this offense. It's certainly making the team more interesting to watch.
Oh, I mean, regardless of what you think, whether you're a Penn State or USC fan or just a casual fan, it was an exciting game. And I think Kodal Nicki was sort of forced to dip into that playbook. We talked about sort of falling behind early and the need to come back and keep pace, particularly early on. And we've seen some things that he's been setting up throughout the season. I'm thinking specifically of the double pass there in the third quarter from Pabula to Aller. It just seemed a matter of time before that was going to happen. And obviously he had to dip into that bag of tricks there to really make a pretty important play to send the momentum back in Penn State's favor. So I've been very happy with what I've seen out of Kodal Nicki. I guess the one that I've been less happy with is Tom Allen. I know he's making these second half adjustments. They were able to do it. It was close this time. It just worries me looking ahead, particularly for Ohio State, but you never know down the road. I don't really understand the, you know, being caught so flat footed here in the first quarter for these games. And again, the fact that tackling's still an issue, the secondary, I think, is still a concern. He's one where I guess I was a little higher coming in on that. Maybe I still have some questions about. Kodal Nicki was more of a wild card to me. I've been really impressed with what I've seen. And again, my concern is after this season that he may feel, if he gets an offer, that it's in his interest to leave, just because Penn State's losing a lot of these offensive weapons, and it may be his better career move to sort of leave on a high note.
Well, I'll worry about that after the season, but I also wonder how much we got spoiled by that defense last year, which was so good. That was a tough act to follow up. But here was my one question on Kodal Nicki is sometimes I wonder if they get a little too cute. By that, I mean when the first time when they did end up with the touchdown pass that got called back because of the penalty. But when you get a first down at the 5-yard line and you have running backs like Nick Singleton and Catron Allen and the ability to put Tyler Warren in the Wildcat or Bo Prabula back there and, you know, a better running quarterback perhaps, I think I would have liked to have seen them commit to the run all three or four plays. And they chose the pass on second down, which I thought that was a mistake there. And just to add to it, this get, and I don't know if this is being too cute is the right way to express it, but there was also in the first half when they had a third and three from their own 49-yard line, so essentially midfield, threw an incompletion on third down, which left them with fourth and three. I would have much preferred, you know, the third and three, you run the ball, give yourself a better option, even if you come up short, maybe it's a fourth and one. Kind of the same thing, second down from, say, the 4-yard line. If you run the ball, you give yourself that opportunity for a quarterback sneak, to tush push or whatever, to get in. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, my dad has similar thoughts to you, although he used more colorful language than cute to describe some of Kodal Nicki's play calling. Look, I mean, I guess, you know, I'm sort of with you in that you have to risk reward, take that into consideration when you're calling the plays. That said, one thing I don't know is, you know, it seemed to me like USC was sort of pretty conscious of their run defense deficiency and that was sort of Penn State's strength. And perhaps there was something there that sort of Kodal Nicki saw. So the USC selling out to take the run, maybe. You know, he thought that's what was a better option to do some of these quick passes. I don't know. But, you know, if we're just quibbling about a few quote unquote cute plays here, I think overall, compared to where we've been the last few years, particularly under Yursich, that's okay by me.
Yes, in the long run. And I'm like that fan that I criticize, where if you make calls like that, they're phenomenal calls. Unless you don't make it, okay? As long as you convert, and as long as we're talking about some of the game decisions, the coach's decisions, 4.5 minutes left in the game, 4th and 7. I know Gary Danielson said he would punt the ball at that point. Penn State chose to go for it. What were your thoughts on that call?
I was for the call. I mean, that was – one of the, like, talk about like the cardiac kids here. I mean, all these fourth down plays, you know, I mean, just really on the edge of your seat. Not that you could even really sit at that point. I mean, just sort of jumping up and down. And you know, I give credit to the coaches again, just for having these guys prepared. Aller, you know, he made the throws. The receivers made the big receptions. There's nothing bigger than that on fourth down when you're on the road like that. And look, USC, I mean, you know, they were moving the ball pretty effectively. And so the idea that you're going to punt it back to them and really be able to rely on that defense to get a big stop there, I was sort of with Franklin and the coaches. Let's just keep the offense out here and try to go win it.
It's interesting folks that I'm talking to are all for. I was the one, and I'm on the one who typically says you go for it on fourth down so much more often, so many more times than what the book says to do. On that one, though, fourth and seven, if you don't convert, essentially the game is over because you're giving USC the ball just ahead of midfield, a first down or two, and it's a field goal, two scores deficit, and the game is over. So I would have been comfortable with them punting. I didn't go crazy for the fact that they were going to go for it, but I was leery of it for that reason, that that could have been the end of the game. And I wasn't real trusting of our defense on Saturday. I just felt that at 4.5 minutes, you have 3 timeouts plus the stoppage at 2 minutes, you would have had a good chance to get the ball back. All right, that's it for quarter number two. Stick around. Lots more to go when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante, and I'm flying solo the rest of the way. Yes, we had some technical difficulties with Steve's connection, unfortunately, but that's all right. I have plenty of thoughts on this Penn State-USC game that I want to talk about, so we'll get right to that. But first, just a reminder, come Whiteout Weekend, Happy Valley United is sponsoring a Whiteout Party on Friday night. That's the Friday night, November 8th, prior to the Whiteout game against Washington. They're having the Whiteout Party at the Nittany Lion Inn, newly renovated Nittany Lion Inn, from 7 o'clock to 11 o'clock Friday evening. There is 80s cover band Velveeta going to perform. So there's music, there's dancing, there's food, there's an open bar. And there's also going to be several Penn State football lettermen in attendance that you can talk to. It's going to be a lot of fun, a great time there. And if you want more details, just check out happyvalleyunited.com. Click the events tab and you will see all the information you need to know about the event. Again, that's a Whiteout Party Friday night, November 8th from the Nittany Lion Inn. All right. When we finished up quarter number two with Steve, I was talking about some of the players and individuals who really advanced their reputation, their standing among the Penn State players, and even with the coaching staff. I mentioned Andy Kotelnicki. I believe we as Penn State fans, we got some of the feel for what Andy Kotelnicki is doing with this team through this season. But it always felt like there was a few things being held back that we weren't seeing. This was really his coming out party, I think, for the whole country to see what Andy Kotelnicki was about as a play caller. And probably no call exemplifies that more than the double pass play. We've seen Bo Prabula and Drew Aller on the field plenty. And the question always was,
why are you keeping Drew Aller on the field? All he does is stand there at the wide receiver position and is not involved in the offense. We all know what was coming, and what was coming was going to be this double pass. What we didn't know was that not only would there be a double pass, but it would start with Tyler Warren snapping the ball in this unusual formation. He's lined up at what looks like a left tackle position, and he's snapping the ball from there. The idea is to fool the defense into thinking he's not an eligible receiver when obviously he is. With all that said, you'd like to think that would really fool the defense. You would have Tyler Warren just streaking down the field all alone. Not the case in this play. There was some pretty decent coverage there, but Tyler Warren was just too good. He made a spectacular catch, even though there was coverage. And I know I mentioned it earlier for Tyler Warren, just a great game. And as we segue now to individual players really standing out, you got to start with Tyler Warren, don't you? And this is a statistic worth repeating. Tyler Warren was targeted 20 times in this game. 20 times. There have been games, just to give you some perspective, where Drew Aller hasn't even thrown 20 passes. But he actually targeted Tyler Warren 20 times and completed passes to Tyler Warren 17 out of those 20 times. What does that mean? If I got my math correct, they were connecting 85% of the time. That's 17 out of 20 targets. That's pretty good. For 224 yards. Another little note from the stat sheet here. Yards after catch. Of his 224 yards that Tyler Warren had in receptions, he had 136 yards after catch. That's a huge number and quite the performance from Tyler Warren. Again, I think Warren is one of those guys that Penn State fans realize that he's a pretty special player. We saw him last year in combination with Theo Johnson. He was pretty much the number two tight end last year. But we saw enough of him and some special catches, very athletic catches that he made to know that he would be a pretty special player. Remember this too. Tyler Warren had a decision to make coming into the season. He could have made the transition to the NFL. Instead, he chose to come back. What does that mean for him? I think it's going to mean a lot. When the NFL comes calling, it's fine. They will know you're pretty good when you're the number two tight end here at Penn State and do some of the things Tyler Warren did. And no doubt he will test very well at the combine. But having a breakout game and a breakout season like he's having, that's going to make Tyler Warren a lot of money. No doubt about that. So, got to give a game ball to Tyler Warren for that performance. Really fantastic. He wasn't the only one, though. I mentioned Drew Aller was 17 of 20 in his passes towards Tyler Warren. Before I get to Drew Aller, let me just take one more step back, though. How in the world do you target a guy like Tyler Warren 20 times, and it seems like the defense still didn't realize that's where the ball's going to go? They didn't emphasize him. He was still able to get open. I don't know what was going on with the USC defense there, but it was crazy how often Tyler Warren was getting open. All right, let's go to the other part of that connection, Drew Aller and Tyler Warren. For the game, Drew Aller was 30 for 43. Another standout performance by him. Just fantastic. 43 passes, easily the most he's thrown in a game this year. Previous high, I believe, was 24. Let's talk about that and what that means. I think the question was, could Penn State win a game where you had to count on Drew Aller throwing the ball 40 times? We know the running backs are there. We know about Catron Allen. We know about Nick Singleton. And this was a game where neither one of those running backs had a huge game. Longest gain, I believe, was 10 yards for either one of the backs. They were bottled up by this USC defense. So it became incumbent upon Drew Aller to win this game for him, for the team. Not only did he put up 43 passes and complete 30 of them, but it was when there was pressure on the team. They came out from the second half down by two scores, two touchdowns, and first two possessions, this team marched right down the field, and they did it by throwing the ball with Drew Aller. That showed that you can put the ball on his hands and depend on him. But it gets even better. Late in the game, the final drive, you're down a touchdown. Have to go the length of the field. And Penn State was confronted with not one, but two fourth down situations. Not just fourth down, not fourth and short, but fourth and long. The first one, on their own side of the field, it was fourth and seven, still 4.5 minutes to go. The team has to make a decision. The announcers, we all heard them. They felt that the ball should have been punted. I got to admit, at the time, I agreed. It was a very, very gutsy call because Penn State still had three timeouts left and the two-minute timeout also. So you could have punted the ball, been justified in doing that. Hope your defense gets a stop and get the ball back with plenty of time to go. They chose to go for it instead. That showed a lot of confidence in the offense and specifically in Drew Aller. He made the pass. Who was it to? Was it Tyler Warren? No. Was it Trey Wallace? No. It was Julian Fleming. And we'll get to him in a second, but this was Drew Aller on a fourth down situation, completing it, getting that first down. So you do that one time in the drive. Now, what happens? You're confronted again with a fourth down situation. This one, fourth down and 10. Now more time is coming off the clock. You're deeper into USC territory. You have no choice now. Now you have to go for it. Fourth and 10, again, Drew Aller comes up huge in that situation, makes the play, and it's to our old friend Julian Fleming once more. Fantastic. Drew Aller, under pressure, got the job done on the road. These are situations where he's no longer that young quarterback. He's the veteran. He's poised. He's the leader of the team. He got it done. All right, that's another guy who I think established himself, definitely for a national audience, but also confirmed his place with the Penn State fans. Who did he complete both those passes to? I mentioned it. It was Julian Fleming. When Julian Fleming announced that he was coming to Penn State, I know there were a few people who probably don't pay attention that closely to the game. All they knew was, this was a five-star kid coming out of high school. This is a superstar. Those who follow the game a little bit closer realize that was not going to happen. That's not Julian Fleming's game. What he is, though, is that reliable player that when you're in a situation like, oh, I don't know, fourth down and the game's on the line, who do you go to? Not once, but twice they went to Julian Fleming. This was Julian Fleming's coming out party as a Penn Stater. He made himself valuable in two situations that were do or die. You don't complete those passes on fourth down, the game is pretty much over. You're down a touchdown. You gave the ball back to USC. Those were must plays. And it wasn't just that Julian Fleming made the play, but he had the confidence of his quarterback, Drew Aller, that he could go to him and Julian Fleming would make the play. Fantastic for Julian Fleming. You know what? That is just about it for this quarter. When we come back, though, there's another player, and I bet you could guess who it is, who really had his coming out party also. We're going to talk about that right after this break. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. I'm Jim Galante, and I'm on my own. We had some technical difficulty with Steve's connection. So quarter three and four, it's just going to be me, which is okay, because I've got still some more thoughts of my own on this Penn State-USC game. Absolutely as exciting a game as I think I can remember from Penn State. Fascinating game. When I wrapped up in quarter number three, I was talking about some individual players who really made a name for themselves in this game, really stood out, and probably changed the perception either from the national audience or among the Penn State folks. We talked about play caller Andy Kotelnicki. We talked about Drew Aller. Of course, we talked about tight end Tyler Warren, who had just a game for the ages. We talked about Julian Fleming, who made both of those fourth quarter, fourth down catches that meant so much to this team. Because if without those plays, they lose the game. They were do-or-die plays, and they got the play done. But with all of that said, the guy who had the game-winning kick, Ryan Barker, what a performance. 4 for 4 in this game. And this season, going into it, we had a kicking competition, according to James Franklin. A three-way competition. And according to James Franklin, it was all very close, very close. Percentage points difference, they keep track of everything during practice. And you had a winner coming out of fall camp, which was Sander Sahadek. Now, he's the scholarship kicker with a huge leg. If you remember, last year in 23, in his first game against West Virginia, he had, I believe it was two misses. Ultimately lost the job, wins it again this year, comes out, West Virginia game, misses, has another couple losses, a couple misses in the season. It became obvious change had to be made. The two misses were in the Illinois game. That could have cost them. So now it's time for Ryan Barker. First off, I was really happy he got a chance to get on the field for a couple tries against UCLA. Not the highest pressure situations, but it gave him a chance to get out on the field in front of 100,000 fans, and he performed. He was 2 for 2. Good sign, but it wasn't exactly the biggest pressure situation. Now we get the USC game. Guess what? Every one of those kicks that he made was a pressure kick, and he made four of them. And remember, things going into overtime, you had the USC kicker, who was the veteran, made three kicks already. Now, his was a little deeper, but still, he missed his kick. When Penn State got the ball back, and this showed a lot, James Franklin and the offense did not even look to get down the field and score a touchdown. Was completely out of the game plan. All they looked to do was set up for the game-winning field goal from Barker. That's the confidence they had in him. They weren't even going to pretend they were shooting for a touchdown. All they did was center the ball between the hashes and give their kicker, their walk-on kicker, the opportunity to win the game. And you know what? He did it so well with so much confidence, and it was a no-doubter. Penn State has found their kicker. That is for sure. So, got to give a game ball to Ryan Barker. What a performance. And congratulations to James Franklin for having the confidence that he had in him. And it's not just about talking it. James Franklin, he walked the walk. He set up the overtime situation for his kicker to win the game, and he did, which was fantastic. All right, let's move on. Let's look at the picture now, bigger picture for Penn State and just how much this win means. Everybody thinks of Penn State as that 10-2 team. If they have Michigan and Ohio State on the schedule, those would be the two losses. Well, they still have Ohio State coming up. They do not have Michigan on the schedule. So it was, okay, where else might they trip and fall to get that second loss? The consensus, going to Los Angeles to play USC on the road. Despite the couple losses that USC already has, this was considered a dangerous team. And you add into that this West Coast trip. So going into this game, you know, you heard it all last week. Big Ten teams, when they have to travel two time zones, the record was 1-8 for the visiting team making that kind of travel. Well, guess what? It seems to be real. We had two teams, both Penn State and Ohio State, traveling west, and I think it showed that it is a factor having to travel that far. We'll get to Ohio State in a second. But back to Penn State, getting down in the first half, down by two touchdowns. I had people texting me, sending me messages, this game's over, it's done. Well, not yet. Sorry, a little too quick on the trigger there. Penn State had a lot of time left, as I always say. If you're going to fall behind early. That's what Penn State did. They had enough time, and that crucial first possession of the second half, they march down the field, they score. It's now 20-13. They ended up finding a way to win in this game. A lot of players came up big. We talked about that. But now, this changes so much for this team. Still undefeated, you now have a bit of margin to play with. The Ohio State game at home, everyone just concedes that's the loss. I wouldn't be so sure, but it now puts them in a position, even with that a loss there, they could afford it. They could have that one loss and probably still put them in position to host a playoff game, which is phenomenal. I can't stress enough how big this win was, and you give yourself a little margin of error. Now, let's look around the country and how many of the really big-time teams have already lost a game and have given themselves no more margin for error. We've seen it. If you want to stick with the Big Ten, Ohio State goes into Oregon. I'll admit it. I thought Ohio State was the much better team. I thought Ohio State would go into Oregon and win the game and give themselves a little bit of leeway here. Not the case. Oregon makes a comeback. They win the game. And now you have a situation. Ohio State has the loss. When they come to Happy Valley, guess who the pressure's going to be on? Not your Nittany Lions. The pressure's going to be on Ohio State. And if you don't think that's legit, just go look at some of those comments about Ryan Day's inability to win the big game. Well, guess what? When he travels to Happy Valley, that will be a big game. He has to win that game. That's what happens when you get that first loss. Then, next you have Michigan for the Buckeyes. They get it's at home, but they still have to play Michigan and get that monkey off their back of losing to Michigan three times in a row. You don't think there'll be pressure on Ryan Day for that game? You haven't been paying attention. So that's the Big Ten picture. And by the way, Oregon, by winning the game, that puts themselves in spectacular position. They will probably be ranked number two this week when the rankings come out. But let's look at the rest of the national picture. Texas, still undefeated, absolutely annihilates Oklahoma in their game. Fantastic for Texas. They've positioned themselves really, really well in their first year in the Southeast Conference. Teams that haven't positioned themselves so well, well, let's take a look at the two powers for the last decade, Alabama and Georgia. Guess what? Yeah, that's right. They already have their first loss. That changes everything for them. You have a situation where Alabama, by losing to Vanderbilt, they put themselves in a very precarious position. They escaped this past week against South Carolina. At home, they escaped it. Don't count on that for the rest of the season, though. Those are teams in the Southeast Conference who have tough schedules and still need to play multiple games against very good teams. So if you're Alabama, guess what? Next week, you have a game with Tennessee. The following week, Missouri. That's a tough road to plow. Let's see what they do. But again, they put themselves in that position with that first loss against Vanderbilt. Who knows what happens after that? And is it just me, or is this a kind of crazy college football season where almost anything could happen? It's not just, oh, Alabama losing to Vanderbilt, but you have other games like Ole Miss losing to Kentucky and Tennessee losing a game that they shouldn't have lost. So what are we going to do? They lost to Arkansas, excuse me. So those kind of games change everything. They just change the formula going forward and give those teams absolutely zero margin for error. What I'm leading up to here is, again, that 12-team playoff changed everything, made so many more games important and critical. Can't wait for the rest of the season to go on, because every week, instead of having one or two games that are going to decide the playoffs, you have three, four, five games with teams who are desperate to make the playoffs. That's what we have to look forward to. It's going to be an absolutely crazy, crazy college football season, and it's going to be followed by an absolutely crazier postseason. And I don't envy those guys who are on the selection committee. There's going to be a lot of chaos when this season ends. All right, that is it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure that you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.